You've discovered TalkZone.com, the best in internet talk radio.
TalkZone.com.
Pro Football Weekly and Basketball News.
Hi, I'm Hub Arkish, and along with Mike Wilkening, it's our pleasure to welcome you to this week's edition of Pro Football Weekly and Basketball News, where every week we bring you all the news, scoops, and rumors before they happen from the NFL, the NBA, and college hoops as well.
We have an in-depth NBA Finals preview, plus all the latest NFL news.
It's all just ahead on Pro Football Weekly and Basketball News.
Pro Football Weekly and Basketball News.
Welcome one and all to this week's edition of Pro Football Weekly and Basketball News. I'm Hub Arkish, the publisher and editor, along with senior editor Mike Wilkening. Now, Jimmy Clemens of the LA Lakers is our co-host every week during the basketball season, but he's got a little deal like the NBA Finals going on right now, so we gave Jimmy the week off, and our number one NBA and college hoops insider, Steve Kyler, the publisher from HoopsWorld.com, good enough to sit in with us this week. Remember, for the very best in NBA and college basketball news, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, you want to get to HoopsWorld.com, and you know, Steve, I know you're based in Orlando. We're based in Chicago. Certainly the Suns had a great run. We all know the story of the Cleveland Cavaliers. But at the end of the day, you kind of get the feeling that Celtics-Lakers is what everybody wanted and should make everybody happy for the next couple of weeks.
Absolutely. And again, this could be the 12th time these two franchises have met in the NBA Finals. So there's a lot of history there. There's a lot of legends you can roll out around this. There's a lot of perspective about this. And, you know, it's a great defensive team against a great offensive team, and that generally is going to yield good basketball.
Well, Mike, one of the things that surprises a lot of people who don't study this for a living is this will be the 12th meeting in the first 11. Boston holds a 9-2 edge, including their last meeting 2 years ago when the Celtics claimed a world title. It was all Boston for a long time. In the mid-late 80s, the Lakers came on. But for the most part, this matchup has been a Celtics series.
It has been. From the Lakers' perspective, you have a historical sort of revenge factor, and you also only have to go back, like you said, 2 years to the way that series ended, certainly in an embarrassing fashion for the Lakers, a humbling defeat, I think one that certainly they want to avenge, and you know, I think that in and of itself, you look at that angle, makes for this to be a particularly intriguing series.
Well, and Steve, a lot of people believe that the key difference in this matchup in 2 years ago is Andrew Bynum. It's one more big in the middle. It's the ability to deal with the guys that the Celtics send at you in waves, and yet Bynum, once again, is not healthy. He had his right knee drained this past Monday. Bynum says it was getting worse. The swelling wasn't leaving. Now, he's had a decent playoff series, averaging 9 points and almost 8 rebounds, but you have to wonder how ready he's going to be to go, and if he's not, how different is this matchup than it was 2 years ago?
Well, again, it'll probably be a lot like the matchup was 2 years ago, although there is a difference maker that we haven't talked about yet, and that's Ron Artest. You know, Ron Artest is certainly an upgrade over Vladimir Radmanovic, but, you know, Andrew Bynum is going to be the focal point guy that you look at, and it's how long can AB go, how much can AB give you, how hard does he have to play and lumber to deal with a knee. But this is a guy for the last 2 years that's been playing with some kind of a knee injury. I remember very vividly him pulling off the contraption from his knee, saying, I'm never going to have to wear that again, and from what I understand, they're fitting him for a bigger one. So he's going to go. There's nothing, there are no games to take off here, and I think a lot of it is going to come down to what kind of production can he give you and how long can he hold down the paint so that the Lakers can do what they do.
You know, Steve, I think the other question, at least in the back of some people's minds, is it's hard to believe it's only been a few weeks since the Lakers were struggling a bit with the Oklahoma City Thunder. Part of that was Kobe. A lot of people felt he wasn't healthy. He didn't seem to have the bounce in his legs, but he got a long layoff before the Jazz series. He'll have almost a full week again here. Is Kobe 100%? Obviously, he needs to be for the Lakers to win this series.
I think 100% for a player like Kobe at this point in the season is a stretch. I mean, is Kobe as good as he is going to be? I think so. But when you've got broken fingers and torn ligaments, the things that Kobe's played through all year, I think the thing is getting his knees some rest, getting his body recharged. He's been sitting out practice for the bulk of the week, which really isn't a big thing. They've kind of been going easy on the guys that have been banged up, because at this point you want your guys being able to give 100% on the floor. And, you know, the one thing is, if it was another player, you pick any player in the roster, I'd be concerned. But with Kobe Bryant, you know he's going to give you every ounce he has, and even 95% of Kobe is better than 100% of a lot of other players.
You know, Mike, we talk about the difference in the Lakers, but what about the difference in the Celtics, who won this matchup convincingly 2 years ago? In fact, they took at least one in Los Angeles that I recall. Now, they're a much better basketball team. Granted, Kevin Garnett, Paul Pierce, Ray Allen are all 30-somethings. Garnett, probably not the player he was 2 years ago, but he is healthy now. And you add Rasheed Wallace, you add Nate Robinson, you still got Big Baby Davis and Kendrick Perkins. Rajon Rondo playing much better basketball team. I think some analysts would argue that it's the Celtics who are as much or more improved as the Lakers from 2 years ago.
Well, when you look at it, particularly the way they've played in the postseason, that argument can be made. And I think that the leap that Rajon Rondo has made to certainly one of the game's elite point guards, while kind of fitting in with the so-called big three and the continued production of those big three. Certainly Ray Allen, still a very, very effective player. Kevin Garnett on his best night, still very effective. And Paul Pierce certainly is going to be a tough matchup for the Lakers. You're right. This is a team that I think, 2 years ago, that was a strong team that won the title. This is has another sort of title winning look to it. And, you look at the Lakers on the other side too, with the way the improvements they've made. Both of these teams, I think, come into this matchup both in top form and rested, which I think is a big key here.
You know, Steve, one of the things the Lakers did have trouble with in all three of their series to get here was point guards, an outstanding point guard play. Now, Rajon Rondo some days looks like an all-star. Other days or nights, he has not been as impressive. But I was also surprised that Nate Robinson wasn't more of a factor until Game 6 of the Orlando series. Is that the key here for the Celtics? Do Rondo and Robinson have to dominate the Lakers in the way that other good point guards have?
I think it's more than dominating. I think it's playing within the system. The reason that a Nate Robinson doesn't get a lot of time early in the playoffs is because he is somewhat unpredictable. He's the wild card player. Does he come in and play the system and run the plays and, more importantly, run the defense the way that Doc Rivers and Tom Thibodeau want to see it run? That's the big limitation. That's the big question mark for Nate. On Rondo, a lot of it is, and it's funny because you talk to the Celtics players and they look back at that 2008 championship team and say, we led the way, Rondo followed. This year, and more so in this playoffs, it's been Rondo leading the way and the big three following. And so the team is going to go as Rajon takes them. And that's the interesting part of this, because it's a really big stage where if you try to do too much, it'll get away from you. And that's the big thing for Boston, is especially as they go into the Staples Center, is trying to, temper things down a little bit and just play their brand of basketball. They've been very good at that so far in the postseason. So I don't suspect that they'll have some problems, but Hubba, I agree with you. I think the point guard position is really where Boston can really exert and show some dominance, if you will, and it's going to be about how well do those guys handle the pressure of the NBA Finals, which is a bit of a different equation, especially for a guy like Nate who's never been this deep before in any class.
Folks, we tape late on Thursday. Game 1 a couple hours away. Game 2 this Sunday. We're back with more NBA Way We Hear It in just a moment. We are back with more of Basketball News and Pro Football Weekly. I'm Hub Arkish. Mike Wilkening is alongside. Jimmy Clemens has got the week off. He's got some other business to attend to, like coaching in the NBA Finals. But our number one, our very favorite NBA insider, Steve Collar, the publisher of HoopsWorld.com, good enough to sit in for Jimmy this week. And, Steve, interesting interview. We haven't seen it all quite yet as we put the show together, but, LeBron James sat down with CNN's Larry King, and of course CNN, being the good promo folks that they are, have leaked out a few of the quotes that they want people to hear to tune in. And one of them is allegedly LeBron is quoted in saying that Cleveland has the edge to re-sign him. He said, absolutely they do. He said it's because the city, the fans, have given him a lot in the 7 years he's been there, and that for him it's comfortable. He's got a lot of memories. So Cleveland does have an edge. That's the quote for Larry King. Based on what you're hearing from insiders, do you buy it?
I do, and I think that it's more than just LeBron that's in that capacity. I think that you're talking about Dwayne Wade in that same light, Joe Johnson in the same light. I think the only free agent that's really likely going to move is Chris Bosh, and it's basically because he's already come out and said, I'm moving. I think Amari Stoudemire stays where he's at, and there's a good chance Carlos Boozer does. I think we get really excited about free agency because it's Christmas Day, it's the unknown, it's the new package that could arrive. But when you really break it down, especially for somebody like LeBron, He's not going to make any more money moving to a new market. All he's going to do is change. He's going to change who he plays with. He's going to change who he works for. He's going to change who he interacts with on a day-to-day basis. And familiarity is, I think, what everybody wants. You just want to be successful at it. And I think that's the one thing Cleveland is going to have to do for LeBron is really paint him a picture of how they're going to contend every year for an NBA championship. And so far, they've gone out and spent all the money in the world. They've been one of the biggest spenders, despite being a middle-tier market in the NBA. So I think they've just got to start saying, these are the players we're going to add around you and let LeBron make his decision. And it's not going to surprise me if the decision is to stay in Cleveland.
Steve, Dwayne Wade's agent, Henry Thomas, has flat-out rebutted or refuted the idea that there is going to be a summit of the top free agents available in this draft. Wade had reached out and said that he was going to talk to LeBron, going to talk to Bosch, possibly going to talk with Joe Johnson. Happy Waters, who is Amari Stoudemire's agent, has said the same thing. What these guys are saying is that they're sure there could be conversations amongst one or two of these guys, but that there will be no summit, that that's silly. And if you think about it logically, it doesn't make sense, because if they all get together, they can't all go to the same place anyway, so what would be the point?
One thing that Dwayne is trying to paint, and I think it's a smart picture to paint, is I've got a lot of friends in this league, and my friends want to play with me, and my friends want to play together. That's a very good sales pitch, because it means if you're on Dwayne's inner circle, if you're Quentin Richardson, if you're Udonis Haslam, that feels real good because you're part of that group. But the reality of it is, especially with the big three, that's even more amusing. Dwayne Wade and Chris Bosh are represented by Henry Thomas, and LeBron is Leon Rose, and they all work for creative artists. So it's really the same agency. Not sure why three guys who have the same agent really need to do anything but just talk to their agent and understand what's going on. But I think at the same time, you want to make sure that you're making a decision that's uniform, that you understand everything that's possible. You don't want to hear that LeBron would take $10 million to play with you versus $15 million to play somewhere else. And those are some things you just don't know what a player's willing to do. But again, I think a lot of this, like you said, Hub, is kind of silly that there's going to be an organized summit. I just wonder what hotel ballroom it's going to take place in and who the delegates are going to be.
Steve, one other question on this free agency thing is Dwayne Wade seems determined to be kind of driving the lead car here. He made some comments earlier this week, actually late last week, that were picked up in Chicago about having to think twice about going to Chicago because it's not an organization that necessarily takes care of its players all that well. Now, this got big play in Chicago, A, because, of course, it's disappointing and concerning, but B, because it's actually not true, and it's something that Dwayne Wade should know. The fact is, if anything, Jerry Reinsdorf has been accused of being far too loyal to his players, and you talk to anybody but Michael Jordan, and that includes Scottie Pippen, even though Pippen did have the one acrimonious contract with the Bulls, and they will tell you that the Bulls have been great to them. And so what it suggests is the only place that Dwayne Wade could be getting that is from Michael Jordan. Anything that you're hearing from your insiders around the league on these comments?
Well, it's no surprise that Dwayne Wade is part of the brand Jordan crew, and they do get unlimited access to Michael. He handpicks those guys. They meet regularly for dinner and golf and in the off season. So there's a very good chance. I think the other part of it is, and Hub, you and I both know this in the print world, is what gets extracted and printed isn't always what's been said. And I think, unfortunately, Dwayne, you know, kind of proves that maybe he's not as knowledgeable about the league as maybe he thinks he is, and that's not uncommon for a player not to understand the intricacies of it. I think what Dwayne sees is that the greatest player that's ever been part of the franchise isn't part of the franchise and probably doesn't understand why he's not, because Mickey Arison in Miami is willing to put everybody involved in that franchise in Miami. So I think a lot of it is just Dwayne showing that he doesn't understand what's going on. I think the other part of it is it was a great soundbite that makes Dwayne look really uninformed, and hey, it got a lot of play because Bulls management got right out in front of that and jumped on it and listed every player, former player, and what role they have or have had within the organization, and it's a pretty impressive list.
Well, and the only thing disappointing, I think, to Chicago fans is that Dwayne Wade grew up in Chicago, and so the assumption is that he would know about the alleged loyalty of the Bulls organization. Wilkie, real quick before we go, Antoine Walker, you talk about the fall from the penthouse to the outhouse. He's being prosecuted in Clark County, Nevada, about $770,000 in debt to three Nevada casinos. He's filed for bankruptcy, claiming $12.7 million in liability and just $4.3 million in assets. Could be facing up to 10 years in prison on bad check charges. A very disturbing story about Antoine Walker.
Certainly. And Hub, again, this is just a very sad story, just in the sense of the gambling debts that have followed Antoine Walker here this last year or so. From his standpoint, you know, certainly, hopefully, it's something that can be settled and that they can avoid any sort of other criminal proceedings going further here. But certainly, the bankruptcy filing, all the other things, not a particularly happy story by any stretch.
Guys, we take one more quick commercial break. We've got lots more NBA Way We Hear It coming up with Steve Kyler and Mike Wilkening in just a moment. Hub Arkish, Mike Wilkening, and Steve Kyler, the publisher of HoopsWorld.com, bringing you Pro Football Weekly and basketball news. Jimmy Clemens of the Lakers is with us every week, but we gave him a week off, a little thing called the NBA Finals. Jimmy should be back with us next weekend. Steve, you are based in Orlando, or in the Orlando area, I should say. The Orlando Magic, many felt the best team in the playoffs going into the Boston series, and suddenly the bottom fell out. Where do they go from here? What's next with this ball club?
Well, that's the $82 million question for the Orlando Magic next year, is they really have no salary cap room to go out and acquire free agents, and they've got a lot of questions they've got to answer themselves. You know, the Vince Carter experiment clearly did not pay dividends the way they expected. General manager Otis Smith said Monday when the team was cleaning out lockers that the team was not that far away. They were inches, not miles, and it was about tweaks, not massive changes. Ironically, he said the same thing last year and brought in seven new guys, including Vince. So it's hard to say really where Orlando's inner thinking is, because they do keep things very compartmentalized. They've got the 29th pick and the 59th pick in the draft. Word is they're trying to sell that guaranteed pick in the first round, so the draft may not be where they look. They've got a couple of key free agents and starter Matt Barnes, who has announced he's going to opt out of his deal and look for life and a bigger contract, maybe elsewhere. He hopes Orlando will give him an offer, but they don't have a track record of really doing that. You've got J.J. Redick, who was phenomenal for them in the postseason, who's going to be a restricted free agent, so they've got to deal with him. And, you know, they still have Brandon Bass, who'd like to be somewhere else other than Orlando. So it could be a very busy offseason for Orlando. Despite what Otis Smith thinks as far as not making major changes, they may have as many as five roster spots to fill. And on a 12, 13-man rotation, that's a pretty big chunk of the team.
Mike, the Phoenix Suns in a similar situation to Orlando for about 3 weeks in the middle of the playoffs. They were the flavor of the month, and then they run into the L.A. Lakers. Now, certainly no shame in losing to the Lakers in five, but the bottom line, or I should say in six, the bottom line here is Amari Stoudemire. You know, they haven't known what he was going to do when he got to this opportunity to opt out of his contract for 2 years now. All of a sudden, he has the best 3 months of his career and early in the playoffs. Now, though, same story. They come up short again. Stoudemire has indicated he is going to test the free agent market. So where does that leave the Suns?
Well, I think it leaves them in a position where they clearly have to try to re-sign him, and they have to try to continue to configure this team to be built around that core of Steve Nash and Amari Stoudemire. And in the event they can't re-sign him, they're going to have to be bold in terms of thinking about how they're going to get another player of his caliber to sign. Because, again, I look at this team pushing the Lakers to six games. You know, offensively, clearly they can score on anybody. They made some incremental improvements defensively. They've got to get better on that end of things. But I don't think they're that far away. I mean, I think there are a lot of parallels between them and Orlando at this point. And I really think that with the right tweaks and primarily the most important thing, re-signing Amari Stoudemire, maybe this team is knocking on the door again in the West next year.
And Steve, the one guy that you don't hear much conversation about, but Dirk Nowitzki did say after the Mavericks' early exit from the playoffs that he is going to opt out and test the free agent waters. What are you hearing are the odds that he actually moves, and should he move? Who do you think are the likely suitors?
Well, I think it's highly unlikely he moves. You know, this is really a financial ploy, and, you know, very much like Amari Stoudemire, who has a $100+ million contract extension on the table from the Phoenix Suns. It's about getting that long-term security and making sure you put the little twist to your team that they're going to remain competitive. And, you know, Mark Cuban has come out and talked about Dirk. Money is not going to be an object in terms of re-signing Dirk. It's going to be about how long and how, you know, which Brinks truck delivers it. He's going to get his money, and it's likely going to be a long-term deal with Dallas. I think, you know, there's an outside chance that a team comes in and sings a better song about competitiveness and winning a championship. And very much like LeBron James, when you've been in the league as long as Dirk has earning maximum contract dollars. It's not about the money anymore. It's about how do I seal my legacy with championships. And, you know, that's where teams like, you know, Boston and L.A. Really start to become attractive to guys in terms of sign and trade opportunities, because the team that can be the closest to the championship really is going to get the audience with some of these guys. But I think when it's all said and done, they're very happy in Dallas. They've built a great organization around him. They've given everything to him in terms of support both on and off the court if he's had both personal and professional issues. And they feel like he's the guy that's going to get them there, and they're going to get him the pieces. And I think that all that's left is for them to come to a new contract, and you just have to kind of go through these motions with Dirk in order to opt out to get the new deal or the extension on the old deal.
Steve Kuyler is the publisher at hoopsworld.com for the very best in NBA and college basketball insider information. We are out of time, gentlemen, but Steve, thank you so much for filling in for us this week. Jimmy Clemens will be back with us next week. Right now, we're going to take a quick commercial break, and on the other side, we kick off our NFL Way We Hear It. And it is time now for us to switch from the hard court over to the gridiron. Hub Arkish along with Mike Wilkening, and we're going to be welcoming in most of the rest of the editorial staff at Pro Football Weekly. We start right now with senior editor Eric Edholm, and Eric covers the NFC East as well as some of the AFC East. And in New England, Randy Moss making some noise this week. He fired longtime agent DiPietro, and originally said he was going to represent himself. Now he says he's looking for someone who can help him with his off-the-field income. And all of this under the radar, or should say out in front of the radar, is under the radar. The Patriots are really worried about getting Tom Brady re-signed.
Yeah, I would say that, you know, Randy Moss, even though his deal runs out after next year, their priorities go Brady first, Logan Mankins, the left guard, second. So, you know, do they have interest in retaining Moss after this year? I think it's going to be a wait-and-see situation, much like it was a couple years ago when they traded for Moss, had one more year left on his deal, and then decided what to do with him, ultimately re-sign him to a three-year deal. So I think that's kind of the approach they're going to take with Moss. As for the change in agent, it shouldn't have any real effect on the situation. He probably will retain someone's services, and, you know, they'll have to sort of wait and see how Randy does this year.
Well, another team with wide receiver issues, we will say, is the Dallas Cowboys, where Patrick Creighton spoke out this week, said that the Cowboys are doing him wrong, said they're messing with his life. He is going to be a free agent. He wants a new contract. The Cowboys have no interest in extending his contract. You got a situation where Austin Miles, coming off a Pro Bowl season, couldn't get any more than the maximum one-year tender. They're stuck with a bad deal they gave Roy Williams after Jerry Jones traded for him, and now they've drafted Dez Bryant. Patrick Creighton can make all the noise he wants. He's not exactly in a great negotiating position.
Yeah, this has to be one of the strangest number three wide receiver controversies we've ever seen. But, yeah, I mean, Creighton had a real nice year on special teams, and he seems like a real good slot receiver. But like you said, bringing in Dez Bryant, I think, was a huge thing that pretty much pushed him down a notch or two on the totem pole there. So, you know, he probably doesn't have a fit in Dallas. Speculation that the coaches want to keep him around as an insurance policy in case Roy Williams or Austin or one of those guys gets hurt. So, you know, he doesn't want to be thought of that. You know, he wants to get dealt or released so he can go on his way and play football. But Cowboys aren't budging right now.
Philadelphia Eagles, Eric, a lot of people thought last year they should have been the NFC favorite, and yet before they ever got out of training camp, all three starting linebackers were injured. They battled injuries at safety all year long. On the offensive line, they were banged up. This offseason, they decide to go younger. They trade Donovan McNabb. They trade Chris Gokong. And now they bring in Marlon Jackson, a cornerback, former first-round draft choice in Indianapolis. They figure he'll start at free safety. Well, that lasted through about one or two OTAs when he ruptured his Achilles tendon. Is this team starting to feel the injury bug already again, or is this an isolated instance?
Yeah, I mean, this is, you'd have to think they're kind of star-crossed with early injuries. I mean, the ruptured Achilles is going to keep him out for the season. Now, this isn't as dramatic or as painful as Stuart Bradley going down last year, and that was a little bit later in training camp. But, you know, clearly Jackson played into their plans. You know, I mean, they talked about him as a versatile defender, having played corner, could play free safety. So that leaves a whole, as of now, Macho Harris, who played some free safety last year, is remaining at cornerback where they moved him earlier in the offseason. So that could switch. I mean, you know, Macho played enough last year where he could be the free safety, but I suspect that rookie Nate Allen is going to get the first crack to start. If he doesn't work, Quinton Demps could step in. So they've got some options there. I don't see them making a play for a guy like O.J. Atagwe.
All right, Eric, now what do we make of the comments of former New York Giant Antonio Pierce? His contract was not redone this year, but I quote when he says, when you talk about a team 3 years moved from the Super Bowl to a team that the year after the Super Bowl was the number one seed in the NFC East, then to a team that was 8-8 and out of the playoffs, there's some fires lit underneath some people's butts now in that locker room and in that organization. Those comments were aimed at Tom Coughlin. Probably some sour grapes involved, but also when you realize the New York, area and the media fire you're under there, he probably isn't completely wrong about Coughlin either.
Yeah, I think obviously Tom Coughlin feels like he needs a big year. We asked him that at the combine, and he certainly felt like they needed a win this season. But, obviously Pierce is now a former Giant. There obviously could be some connection to some sour grapes there as well. But, you know, I look at Coughlin and I think that, you know, given all the moves they've made this offseason, especially bolstering that defense and adding depth and adding competition, you know, the pressure really is on to return to the playoffs, fix what happened on defense last year, and make a big splash. So I agree. Pierce might not be that far off.
All right, Eric, thank you very much for your help with those stories. We're going to take a quick commercial break here, but we've got a lot more NFL Way We Hear It coming up on the other side. We roll on with more NFL Way We Hear It here on Pro Football Weekly and Basketball News, and welcome in Associate Editor Dan Parr. And Dan, a couple of your clubs in the news. There's talk down in Tampa Bay that the wide receiver battles in training camp could be very interesting. And a lot of it centers on a former number one pick, Michael Clayton. And he's been in the news before, but it's possible at this point that he could literally be on the bubble. Now, he just got a new deal a couple of years ago that had $10.5 million guaranteed in it. And yet with the additions of Reggie Brown and Aurelius Ben drafted high, he might not even be around this year.
Hub, it's going to be interesting to see how this shakes out because Clayton is certainly on the bubble now. Some people think that he's assured of a spot just because last offseason the Bucks did pay him $10.5 million guaranteed with his new contract. It'd be hard to see them cutting the cord after just 1 year into that deal, but if he comes out and performs really poorly in camp and they feel confident in Aurelius Ben, Reggie Brown, I know they like very much already, Mike Williams, another fourth-round pick, a guy who they think could possibly contribute right off the bat. They have Sammy Stroud coming back after a pretty decent first season. So they have some guys that they think are on developing into pretty good receivers, and Michael Clayton certainly is not. He's coming off a year in which he caught just 16 passes.
Well, and Clayton blamed a lot of that on struggles with continuity at the quarterback position, didn't call out his teammates, but said, you know, we always had a different guy. Josh Freeman is clearly the guy now. This is going to be his football team, but how ready is he? I mean, is Raheem Morris comfortable that they won't continue to have inconsistency at the quarterback position?
Well, they're always going to be out there. That's something that, you know, they went through three different quarterbacks last year. Freeman, whether he's ready to be a top line guy, I don't know about that. And he still has a bunch of young receivers, so he doesn't exactly have a great situation there. The running game, you know, wasn't one of the tops in the league last year. The offensive line had its issues, so he's not surrounded by the greatest supporting cast, but they're pretty confident in Josh Freeman. They look at him as the face of the franchise. He's going to be out there sink or swim. I don't think you're going to see them turning anything over to Josh Johnson next season.
Dan, another club that you cover, the Miami Dolphins, have had an interesting offseason. They certainly made big headlines with the trading for Brandon Marshall. But other headlines that they've been making, they can't be too happy about. The most recent defensive end, Philip Merling, is charged with aggravated battery against his girlfriend, who is 2 months pregnant. Running back Ronnie Brown and cornerback Will Allen both were arrested for DUIs earlier this offseason. Tony McDaniel also charged with domestic violence, the defensive tackle. Tony Sperano and Jeff Ireland and Bill Parcells can't be real pleased with this. What is the party line coming from the Dolphins organization right now?
Well, Tony Sperano pretty much said he's frustrated with what's going on, and he also made the statement that he's not a judge, which I don't think anyone was confused about, but he made that clear. I don't know. They have pretty much said they're going to allow the legal system to run its course. There's been no punishment from the Dolphins on any of these guys yet. The NFL has not come out and, come out with any suspensions for any of them yet. Philip Merling, with the latest case, that was something that just because the situation with a girlfriend who was 2 months pregnant really inspired a lot of emotion from people reacting to that. He posted $15,000 bail and was free now, and that's going to be a something to keep an eye on, what happens with him. But the Dolphins really haven't stepped up and said any of these guys will be getting suspensions or fines.
All right, Dan, thank you very much for your work on those stories. We now welcome in Associate Editor Arthur Arkish. And, Arthur, busy offseason in Jacksonville. There's no question that Jack Del Rio is very much on the bubble. David Garrard is very much on the bubble. And a lot of their success is going to depend on the offensive line in front of Garrard. And right now it's an offensive line that is very much in flux and possibly even a little more confused with the acquisition of offensive guard Justin Smiley from the Miami Dolphins.
The good news for the Jaguars is that they're very happy about the bookends, their offensive tackles, the 09 first and second round picks, Eugene Monroe and Eben Britton. They like them a lot. They think that they could anchor that line for the next 10 years, they hope. Unfortunately, the interior of the line is a much bigger concern. As you mentioned, they did go ahead and make a deal with the Dolphins to acquire Justin Smiley, who they hope can come in and push for a starting job. They're is also kind of some concern because he was just given $25 million by the Dolphins over a little over 2 years ago and was essentially told a couple months ago to stay away from the team. His chronic shoulder problem had become so bad that they just weren't confident that he was going to be able to contribute this season. So he's going to have a chance to compete for a job. Now they have Vince Manui, who has been trying to recover from torn ligaments in his right knee that he suffered the 08 season opener and just hasn't been the same guy since. He started all 16 games last season, but just wasn't the same guy and had actually been demoted to the second team during the offseason in OTAs a couple weeks ago and replaced by veteran Keenan Fournier, who came over from the Chargers last year. So it's certainly going to be worth watching. They were able to restructure his contract, so it was kind of a low-risk investment. And they're kind of hoping to catch lightning in a bottle and see if they can get the Justin Smiley who earned the big deal a couple years ago.
All right, Arthur, thank you very much. The longest tenured Jaguar center, Brad Meester, also fighting for his job at center. So, again, very interesting going to training camp for the Jaguars. We take a quick break and more Way We Hear It in a moment. We continue with our NFL Way We Hear It, all the news, scoops, and rumors before they happen, and we now welcome in Associate Editor Michael Blunda. And Michael's got the Buffalo Bills amongst his ball clubs, and while not a lot of news come out of Buffalo right now, kind of strange story of Marshawn Lynch. Clearly not the future in Buffalo. They like Fred Jackson. They've drafted C.J. Spiller. And yet, according to Lynch, he's been told by the club that they are not going to trade him, that he should plan on staying in Buffalo. Michael, you're not necessarily buying that, huh?
Yeah, it seems like a very odd situation that they'd want to keep him around. It's clear that he's not going to be a featured player in their offense this year with Fred Jackson, C.J. Spiller around. And it seemed like they might be able to get at least something for him on the trade market. He's been unhappy in Buffalo, caused a lot of off-field problems. So it would seem to make sense that they'd want to explore a trade, but that doesn't seem to be what they're saying right now.
Well, they're not saying it, but we all know what's going on in Seattle. Very strange story there with the release of Lendale White shortly after they trade for him and a team that clearly needs a running back. Lynch is from the West Coast, from Northern California. It would seem to be a match made in heaven.
Yeah, absolutely. Seattle was reportedly interested in Marshawn Lynch during draft weekend. The Bills reportedly were looking for too high of a draft pick in return and turned Seattle off. So now that they've cut ties with Lendale White, it seemed to make a lot of sense that they'd go after a guy like Marshawn Lynch to be their lead back.
All right, Michael, thank you very much. We're now going to get back to Wilkie in studio and Mike, the Pittsburgh Steelers. Well, the OTAs took a little different turn this week with a veteran quarterback showing up and being allowed to practice again. What is the latest on Big Ben and the Pittsburgh Steelers?
Well, Ben Roethlisberger cleared to return to practice and did so, returned to OTAs this week and got the bulk of the work with the first team offense, and that seems to be something that they're going to try to do in off-season workouts. The big question is, what do the Steelers do when training camp starts? And again, there isn't a clear sort of a blueprint or approach that the Steelers have shared with that yet, though Mike Tomlin has said that there is a distinction between OTAs and training camp, and that there has to be an emphasis in training camp in terms of getting, you know, guys fighting for jobs and getting the team ready to go. So with that in mind, earlier in OTAs, Byron Leftwich got the snaps in the first team offense, and that was something that's going to happen. You know, Dennis Dixon got a few more first team reps here over OTAs this week, which I think was a kind of an interesting development. And again, the idea was to get him more work with the first team offense. But I think going forward, again, right now, Leftwich probably the favorite to start once, you know, Roethlisberger serves anywhere from what is right now a 6-game suspension, but could be 4 games, with Dixon probably the number 2 quarterback.
Mike, as we tape the program, the story we're getting is that Shane Graham probably already is a Baltimore Raven. The signing was imminent. The bottom line is that this is a team that's had problems at place kicker ever since they parted away with Matt Stover several seasons ago. They finished the year last year with Billy Cundiff. Graham is a guy who had a pretty good career in Cincinnati, 23 of 28 last year, averaged 63.3 yards on 69 kickoffs. You have to wonder, why is he not back in Cincinnati, and is he finally the answer for the Baltimore Ravens to a problem they've been unable to solve?
Well, I think the answer to the reason why he's not back in Cincinnati, Hub, I think kind of comes to the way it ended for him in Cincinnati. The two misses in the playoffs, I think, was something that really wasn't the way that anybody wanted that season to end. And I think it maybe was time for a new start for all sides. They're going to give the job to either Mike Nugent or Dave Rayner. That's going to be a competition. And now if Graham does indeed sign with Baltimore, he competes with Billy Cundiff, who was good, though not great, when Steve Hauschka kind of failed at the end of, struggled at the beginning of last year. So I think what it comes down for the Ravens is to find a guy that's going to make the kicks that he's supposed to make. And I think the guy that does that most often in the summer is going to have a chance to win that job.
Mike, thank you very much. We are going to take one more commercial break here, but we still have the Publisher's Pen to come. That's next on Pro Football Weekly and Basketball News.
The Publisher's Pen, with the publisher and editor of Pro Football Weekly, Hub Arkish.
Now, Mike, this is an easy one. We've got the Lakers and the Celtics in the NBA Finals. Does it get any better than this? The Boston Celtics with 17 world championships. The Lakers are second with 15. This is the 12th time that these two clubs meet in the finals of the NBA. In the history of the four major professional sports in this country, no two teams have met more for a championship than the Boston Celtics and the LA Lakers. And you talk about the star power we've gotten used to in these series. Everybody knows the history of the Celtics, of course, with Bill Russell and Bob Cousy and Larry Bird and Hondo Havlicek and DJ. It goes on. And from the Lakers' perspective, once they finally got the first of those two wins, it was with Magic Johnson and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. And now, of course, Kobe Bryant's ball club. Shaq is long gone. But with Kobe, you've got Pau Gasol. You've got Ron Artest. You've got star power everywhere. You look back at the Celtics, a number 4 seed during the regular season, and yet maybe playing better basketball than the Lakers, certainly the dominant team in the East. This is a series that everybody has to love. The fact that it is practically a rematch. They met 2 years ago with the Celtics taking that one. Of course, Kevin Garnett missed a good part of last year, and the Celtics didn't go deep in the playoffs. Now they're back. It's about as good as it gets in professional sports, and we're all going to enjoy this one. Our thanks to Steve Kyler of HoopsWorld.com for co-hosting with us this week. Randy Meyer, such an outstanding job every week as our producer and engineer. Our thanks to Syndication Network, our home studio and syndicator. And most of all, our thanks to all of you. Tune in again next week, same time, same station, for Pro Football Weekly and Basketball News.